Hello there and welcome to the first front page of 2025. We're going to keep things nice and simple for our opening show of the year. We're looking at the best chases from the Christmas racing period, the best hurdlers and some of the worst weather with abandonments galore in recent days. My name is Lee Mottershead and I'm joined here in the studio by James Stevens. Hello, James.
Hi, Lee. All okay?
Good, thank you. And at home in Ireland, David Jennings. Hello, DJ.
Hello, Lee. Happy New Year.
And to you too, sir. We'll start off by a few obligatory but much wanted pleasantries. DJ, good Christmas?
I had a great Christmas, Lee, I have to say. We have a two-year-old and a four-year-old, so you can just imagine the excitement with Santa around here. And I actually had last week off as well. It's just made it last that little bit longer. So there was a remote control, cars flying around the place. We even, Georgia even got a little pony cycle. So they're kind of going on this kind of rocking horse that moves all around the place. So we've had a few fallers. Let's just say we probably haven't got the best jumpers in the house so far. A few fallers off the pony cycle. But a great Christmas, Lee.
You've got a beautifully white ceiling there as well.
Yeah. Well, we're only in the house about 2 years, so it'd want to be white at this stage, I suppose.
Well, you're maintaining it beautifully. James, how was your Christmas?
Yeah, good, thanks. Bit of a nightmare weekend. I was all packed and ready to go to Wincanton, and that got called off, and the beloved Newport County 6 points against Morecambe got called off in the last minute as well. So when we talk about weather woes, I've been badly affected. But hey, I did have a great time at Chepstow and Welsh Grand National Day without seeing a thing.
We'll talk about weather woes later in the programme in relation to racing, not Newport County. But first, the Christmas racing. It was fantastic in Britain and Ireland. We'll talk about the hurdlers in part two. Part one is all about the chasers. DJ, what should we be talking about?
Well, it seems probably extraordinary not to start with Gallop in the Champs, but I'm not going to start with Gallop in the Champs because I was thinking about this when the run order came through, and I was thinking, you know, what was the one performance that properly wowed me? And it was Kempton on December 27th, and it was Sergino, because I know he went off favourite and he was extremely well backed. And in fairness to Nicky and all the Seven Barrows camp, they had never, you know, hidden their admiration for his jumping. And you could sense every time Nicky Henderson was asked about Sergino that he obviously schooled unbelievably well. But just to see him do it against a horse of the calibre of Ballyburn, yes, it was the wrong race to go for. 2 miles, decent ground, Kempton, just all wrong. But he was still the best ever winner of the what is now the Turner's Novice Hurdle in modern day history. So you have to put that in perspective. For Sergino, a four-year-old, now five, to do that to a horse who was the best winner of the opening race on the Wednesday at Cheltenham this century, it was extraordinary. And just some of the jumps he put in, I think he's actually even going to get better because he hit the first and he seemed to learn so much from it. And I think the more we see him, the more he's going to learn. And he just looks another in that Sprinter Sacra, Altior Shishkin kind of mould. And who knows, he could be every bit as good as any of them. It's a massive level he has to get to be considered that good, but it was just an extraordinary start to his chasing career. At Leopardstown on the 28th, and it was a funny sort of Leopardstown because the 26th was horrible, couldn't see a thing. 27th was slightly better, but still it was foggy and it was all a bit of a mess. And then it just came to the 28th and it was just this most glorious, beautiful, crisp, clear day where you could see everything. And it was a huge crowd and there was a lovely atmosphere. And then Gallop in the Champs did what he did. And it was just the right result. And the way he went about his business was just exceptional. He just jumped brilliant. And there was that kind of fleeting moment about 10 yards from the last fence where you thought, oh, Pack the Foil is going to get him. And then he pings the last and he's gone. And he wins by 7 lengths. And it takes Paul Town and then Age to pull him up. And you're just going, look, he is, you know, the best chaser we've seen in a long, long time. And that was just a magic day at Leopardstown. Really, really enjoyed it. And I suppose other chasers that were impressive. I thought Il Atlantique was very good at Nace yesterday. I think he'd have absolutely no chance in the Narkel. I think he'd win the Brown Advisory if that's the route they go. I could just see him lobbing around over 3 miles. I think he'll stay. I just think he'll get run off his feet in an Arkle. I think it's a no-brainer to go for the Brown Advisory, in my opinion. But yeah, he looked really good and really stylish. He looks in a similar, not as good obviously, but he looks in a similar mold to Alaho in that he's just a completely different beast over fences to what he was over hurdles. Yeah, really impressed. But I suppose the three real standouts from my point of view, I know we'll probably talk a little bit about the King George and, you know, probably did the best horse win the King George? I'm not so sure, but yeah, it was certainly there was maybe my top three chasing performance, I suppose, Gallop in the Champs, Sergino and Il Atlantique.
Well, let's start, DJ, you start with Sergino. We're going to have a big bit on him, but let's just start with Gallop in the Champs because he's the best chaser in training. He is now the clear Gold Cup favourite. Actually, before I go to you, DJ, let's go back to James for a second. Is the Gold Cup now Gallop in the Champs 3? Is he a good thing for the Gold Cup? Because realistically, can you see any horse troubling the animal that was so authoritative at Leopardstown on the 28th?
Well, I sat last night and had a good think about that same question, thinking you might ask me, because it's a question everyone wants to know.
Absolutely.
And Gallop in the Champs, I was thinking, well, the Gold Cup, it takes a lot out of a horse. He's done it twice. He's another year older, perhaps. And A, he was absolutely magnificent, and you can't at all fault him or anything he did. That was the foot-perfect textbook way to win a 3-mile Grade 1 chase. Spot on, he was fantastic. You want to take him on because you think, well, he's a short price favourite for the Gold Cup at Cheltenham. A lot can happen in the race, and, you know, he's another year older. But there isn't any real horses you look at that think they have the potential to reach the level he is at or what he produced on over the Christmas period. So he is really rock solid in that sense. I mean, the one I thought perhaps, I'm looking at the race now as Gallop in the Champs probably wins, but not anything against him. The Gold Cup can throw up a surprise, as we all know, and winning it three times is not easy, even if you are as good as Spanish Champs. Monty Starr was the one I thought perhaps had that potential to go to the next level.
But
he has got to improve a long, long way. He was beaten on New Year's Day, didn't run the best of races. I didn't think things went his way, but he wasn't actually that far behind Factor File at Cheltenham last year. He went wide. The slow pace didn't suit him. He was the horse I thought, well, if I want to have a bet in the race, I would want to bet him each way at this point, because I do think Gallop in the Champs is pretty rock solid. And if he does go and complete that hat trick, what an incredible achievement it is.
Yeah, absolutely. And DJ, the way that Paul Tannen was talking about him after the race on the 28th, the way Willie talks about him, it sounds as though in Willie Mullins' mind, there's no question now, nor really has there ever been, that Gallop in the Champs was likely always to be superior to Factor File in a Gold Cup. Is that fair, do you think? In their heads, it's a done deal almost.
Yeah, I think it's trip-wise. And I know for, I suppose, viewers who watch Up in the Ante, they'll know that Johnny Deneen put up Factor File for the Ryanair chase at the Shetland Festival. And I presume it's probably at this stage a flip of a coin. It's even money each of two which race he goes for. He's now, I think, 5s or 11-2 for the Ryanair. I think he's maybe 4-1 best price for the Gold Cup, but that's probably the each way angle, because if he does go for the Gold Cup, you'd imagine he'd be in the first three. Just 3 mile, 2.5 furlongs off a scorching pace at Cheltenham. I couldn't imagine Factor File absolutely belting up the hill like Gallop in the Champs does after the last, to be honest with you. I'd have serious question marks about his stamina. He'll need to properly learn to relax in the early part of the race. He can't even if you look back at last year's Brown Advisory, he did, his jumping was good, really good, but he wasn't assured, if that makes sense. He was kind of guessing, but he was quick guessing. And I think he needs to learn to do things. He needs to learn to relax, and he needs to learn to pop. I think those are the things, two things he really needs to learn to do to win a Gold Cup. I just can't see how he'll reverse that form with Gallop. I think Gallop in the Champs is, I know he's brilliant around Leopardstown, and he probably is better around Leopardstown than he is around Cheltenham. But, you know, he's basically won four times at Cheltenham, because he's won the Martin Pipe. He would have won the Turners by a mile if he stood up, and he's won two Gold Cups. So you can't say he doesn't like Cheltenham, but he just looks exceptional around Leopardstown. But 3 mile, 2.5 furlongs, I just can't see how that form would be reversed. And I see what James is doing there, looking for something maybe from an each way point of view, because when you go through it, you're kind of going, oh my God, first of all, what's going to run in the race?
Yeah.
And second of all, what on earth is going to chase him home if Factor File goes for the Ryanair? And you're into the likes of Monty Starr and Splanstair and Grey Donning. The one horse I think is absolutely corking each way bet at the moment is Jerry Calam, because while all the others have been doing all their things, Jerry Calame has been kind of, you know, probably given a very light campaign up until now. Missed the Savills because I don't think, you know, he was electrifying in his work at home since the race at Down Royal. But you're now talking about a 16 or 14 to 1 shot for the Gold Cup, who was second in the race last year. And I presume he's going to run somewhere between now and March. And if he even repeats that run last year, you know, he's going to finish second again. So he's probably the each way angle from my point of view if James is picking Monty Starr.
And are we pretty happy, guys, that, I mean, the King George, in theory, well, it is Britain's most prestigious staying chase outside of the Gold Cup. But James, Banbridge, Collard d'Ile Français on the line. There were stamina doubts about Banbridge going into the race. Well, he dispelled those doubts. But it's a big leap again to think of yourself going over 2.5 furlongs further at Cheltenham in the Gold Cup. And d'Ile Français, for all that he looked, I think David DJ was hinting at this before, that did the best horse win the King George. I thought d'Ile Français was the best horse in the race, but he doesn't look a Gold Cup horse.
I don't think neither of them do. 3 miles at Kempton, 3 mile 2 around Cheltenham is a completely different game. And DJ mentions it there about what's going to run in the Gold Cup. My verdict was an Irish 2.5 miler beat a French possible 2 miler in Britain's best 3 mile race before the Gold Cup, which is not the best endorsement of British 3 mile chases. And I mentioned there Banbridge. I think he just about gets 3 miles, and Kempton's a sharp track, and that's possibly he's always been a strong stayer over that trip when he gets his ground. I think the ground is an important part, and it's fantastic for connections that they got the ground at the right time on Boxing Day, which isn't always a certainty given the weather. I think that was probably his Gold Cup for the season. Connections aimed at the King George, and he was the strongest stayer at that sort of turn from home to beat d'Ile Français. I thought d'Ile Français ran a blinder. This was a horse who had bled, and to go out and be bold and so, we call it aggressive, but they knew what they had. They knew how good he jumps, and it's exactly the best way to deploy him. If I was Connections, I would definitely be looking at 2 miles.
Yeah.
He shows so much pace. He jumps with so much fluency and so much verve. And, you know, for all that John Bonn is this so-called banker in the Champion Chase, he's been upset before. He got upset in the Clarence House at Cheltenham only last January when he was taking on a good front runner that day. So he has definitely got a chink in his armour for all he's improved. And if I was Connections of d'Ile Français, I'd be thinking, we aren't going to stay that Gold Cup trip. We're not certain to. We'd be not certain to beat Gallopin Deschamps, who looks like he's made for that trip. That is possibly an opening. And I mean, for a horse like him who looks so exciting, I don't know. Would you really want to be running in a Ryanair? Is that really what you want to do?
How magic would it be if he did run in the Champion Chase? Like, he would just add this extra dimension to the race of not having a clue what was going to happen. Mm. And I always think that uncertainty is beautiful in a race. Like, if d'Ile Français, look, he should have won the King George. Like, the best ride won the King George, not the best horse. And, like, it was only after the race. Like, I didn't notice it as much at the time, but, like, you're looking at a King George. This horse has been aimed at this race for so long. And I'm one of James Reveley's biggest fans. Like, I go back to, what was the horse called? Diamond? Do you remember the horse he used to ride in, ran a couple of Betfair chases?
Oh, Diamond Harry.
He used to ride Diamond Harry. And, like, I love James Reeve. I love him as a person, love him as a jockey. But he must be watching back King George going, oh, my God, why? Like, it was only when it was pointed out to me after the race how much before the last fence he gradually started easing up. And they're going, this is the King George. This is massive. Like, you have to grab a race like that by the scruff of the neck, like, and maybe he wouldn't have won anyway, but you're just kind of going, imagine if he was fired into the last and he absolutely pinged it. It would have been hard for Banbridge to get to him, like, but it was, for, you know, 9/10 of that race, it was the most glorious thing to watch. And you just see James Reveley and see d'Ile Français, and they're just in tandem with each other, and they just have this beautiful relationship, and he gave me the most beautiful ride until about 10 strides before the last fence. And look, I'm probably 15 stone too heavy to be a jockey, and I'll never know what it feels like to be in between those last two fences in a King George, but it's just that thing in the back of my mind that it would have been very interesting. What do you think, Lee? What's your thoughts on it?
I think, from speaking to him after the race, I think he had a view that the horse had basically was the tank was emptying rapidly, and he didn't have the confidence to throw him at that final fence. And it's funny, there are some tracks where you think of the final fence and you think horses never fall at that. It's very rare for a horse to fall at Cheltenham's final fence or Sandown's final fence, but Kempton's final fence, we've seen lots of races change there with horses tipping up, including in the King George, obviously. And I just think in the back of his mind, he didn't have the confidence in what was left in the horse's tank to throw him at that.
Do you think, though, that the fact that that was almost the first thing out of his mouth straight after the race, and I seen the interview, I was thinking, he knows. He knows himself that, right, I need to get an excuse in here quick. And as I said, look, I'm a massive James Reevely fan. And, you know, he's just so brilliant to watch. And him and Lille Francais, they just get it. They get the game together. And yeah, I just give him like another five strides maybe. But yeah, but going back to James's initial point, Lille Francais in the champion chase, like, look, he could be tailed off. He mightn't handle the Cheltenham. He mightn't handle the undulations. He mightn't be half as good over 2 miles. But Jesus, he had some extra dimension to that race. I would love to see him in the champion chase.
DJ, before we go on to the novices, reading Patrick Wally's excellent piece in the Racing Post today, looking back at the Christmas period, he rode Gaelic Warrior in the Grade 1 2-miler at Leopardstown, was beaten fair and square on the day by Solness. But Patrick seemed pretty happy with how the horse ran with a view to the champion chase. Do you see Gaelic Warrior still as Chris Sutton's number one hope for that race?
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Do you know what it reminded me of? It reminded me a tiny bit of Galloping the Champs, in that when Galloping the Champs, a younger horse and a novice chaser, it was all kind of gung-ho. It was like even at Cheltenham, and when he exploded onto the scene as beginner's chase at Leopardstown, Galloping the Champs, it was all mad. Like, do you know what I mean? It was unbelievable to watch, but it was mental. Like, he was letting fly at fences. He was going miles clear, and you couldn't sustain that for a couple of years. Like, and I almost see that in Galloping the Champs, or in Gaelic Warrior, should I say, in that they're trying to mould him in to a horse that's going to be around for a couple of years. And it was all popping and, you know, all kind of teaching. It looked to me like, you know, a child that had, you know, been in junior or senior infants over here and then goes into first class, and you're trying to teach him new ways to do things and teach him how to grow up. And that's what I thought Patrick did. I thought if you backed him in the race on 27th, he'd be kind of coming away from the race going, oh, that was kind of one that got away. Like, he did finish quite strongly to get within a couple of lengths of Solness. And you're kind of going, could he have actually won the race? But as regards to the future, and Patrick kind of mentioned this in his column, as regards to the future, it could be the making of him, because I've never seen him pop fences like he popped down the back. He was getting in closer to fences and popping and popping and popping. I can't remember him letting fly at any fence in that race. I know it's hard to see with the fog, but I think it's a kind of a new Gaelic Warrior that seems to be emerging. And if he does learn to settle and does learn to relax, like he almost did in the Arca last season, like, he's going to be a serious force to be reckoned with. And it's going to be a fascinating champion chase, even if Lille Francais isn't there between John Bonn and Gaelic Warrior, because I think that's going to be a corker.
Yeah, absolutely. Before we move on to hurdlers, the novices, James, DJ has already referenced Sergino, who was mesmerising at Kempton in the Desert Orchid Chase, beating Ballyburn. We've seen Across Christmas and Berry Pass win a Grade 1 for the Double Green team, and Willie Mullins, great day for Daryl Jacob, who's a wonderful jockey who's just retired. Better days ahead in Croke Park, fought out the finish of the Grade 1 at Leopardstown, finishing in the other order, Croke Park winning that one. The Jukebox Man was fantastic in the Corto Star Novice Chase. What lessons have you learned from the novices over Christmas?
The one takeaway was the Jukebox Man for me. I absolutely love the horse. Cheltenham horse, of course. Yep. Always like to support the big West Country horses. Loved the performance. I think that was a pretty poor Grade 1, actually. I think that's possibly one of the worst Grade 1s I've ever seen. And he won it at Shade Coast. It wasn't the most impressive performance, but he's just got that aura of professional professional ability with him. He goes about his business in the right way. He jumps well. He's not the sort of flashy performance from Sugino we see, but he's got all the makings of a very good 3 mile chaser. And I expect him to be a serious contender in the Brown Advisory because you know he'll stay that trip well. Obviously, he had the heartbreak of the Albert Bartlett. He's an improving horse all the way. He seems better as a chaser. And yeah, you mentioned a Cut of Croke Park and Better Days Head and Parrot Pass. Good horses in their own right, but I've not seen anything from Ireland yet where I'm going in that 3 mile division. What's an absolute brilliant 3 mile chaser in the making? Ballyburn is the question mark, which we mentioned. What does he do trip-wise? To me, I would go up and trip with him. He jumped and ran like a horse who needed further. Was he just taking on a freak? There's probably a bit of both, but he has the breeding as well to go up and trip. But the takeaway from the novices was the Jukebox Man, I'm going to continue to love and follow. But yeah, I'm certainly not going to be betting anything in the Arkle at the minute. I think that might be sewn up.
DJ, you and Johnny are the antipost kings, but you know I like a few antipost bets going into the festival. I have very few this season, but one I did do, James referenced Ballyburn. I like to back horses in the non-run and no bet market who I think, well, if they don't go to the race in great form, they're probably not going to run anyway. And I just looked at Ballyburn, 3-1 non-run and no bet, but obviously bigger price outside that concession. But I feel probably go to Leopardstown for that 2 mile 5 grade one at the Dublin Racing Festival. I could see him hosing up around there because, as you said, he's the best horse ever to win the Turners in recent years. I could see him hosing up there and going into 5-4, 11-8 for the Brown Advisory. And if he doesn't, he probably won't run anyway. You've always been a big fan of Ballyburn, haven't you? But yet you were saying you thought Il Atlantique was the most likely winner of the Brown Advisory.
Yeah, just to go back to your anti-put, it's so funny because I obviously do up in the ante and we sit beside each other in Cheltenham every year and we're typing away and I'm going, oh my God, something I tipped for an absolute shocker in some race. And then you go, Annie Luckley, and Lee is like, yeah, well, actually, I was on Constitution Hill at 10-1 for the Supreme. And you're like, oh, Jesus Christ. Yeah, Lee is actually a very shrewd anti-post punter. He might let on he's not, but he's very shrewd and far shrewder than me. Look, I can see your point with Ballyburn. One thing that's interesting with you said about Ballyburn going for the 2 mile 5 race, Willie Mullins was asked about Il Atlantique, and he said, would he go for the 2 mile 5 race at Dublin Racing Festival? He said, no, we'll probably stick to 2 miles if the ground is deep, and you know we can take on Majbur in that because we've got Imperi Pass for the 2.5 mile race. And you'd almost think his instinct would be to say, because we've got Ballyburn for the 2.5 mile race, but it wasn't. It was Imperial Pass was the horse he mentioned for that race, which makes me think that that's the race he has in mind for Imperial Pass. And I just wonder with Ballyburn, will he try and find a kind of a confidence-boosting sort of race from if there is one there? I don't know. I don't know the programme book as well as I probably should, but if they could find maybe a, you know, 2.5 mile/3 mile, you know, novice chase somewhere, it'll obviously probably have to be a graded race, but I'd say they just want to get confidence back into him because you don't want to be going into the heat of battle in a proper race after that mistake he made at the last at Kempton. I do like the horse. I'm a massive fan of him. I don't think he's in love with jumping fences from what I've seen so far. It was all a bit messy, wasn't it, at Kempton? Yeah. It was all a bit, maybe it was just his jumping was overemphasized by Sergino being so good, but it didn't look to me like he's improved for fences, put it that way. So it's going to be interesting to see their next move with Ballyburn. But as regards your bet, sure, look, there's every chance he could absolutely bolt up wherever he shows up next and be 5-4 evens, as you say. So there's certainly nothing wrong with your bet anyway.
Well, time will tell. One thing that is an absolute definitive yes is the Racing Post Members Club represents fabulous value. And here are a few words of praise for it. Welcome back to the front page. We've spoken about the top chasers from the Christmas period. Now, the top hurdlers. And one hurdler is probably the most talked about horse in jump racing and has been now for a few years. That is Constitution Hill, who returned to racing in the contest in which he left racing 1 year earlier, the Christmas Hurdle at Kempton. There was all the debate about could he bounce back to his best, could he return to winning form after that dismal gallop at Kempton before last year's Cheltenham Festival, a pretty underwhelming gallop at Newbury prior to what was supposed to be his return to racing in the Fighting Fifth Hurdle. An issue arose after that, but he did make it to the track in the Christmas Hurdle and he won. He wasn't as good as he had been when he won his first Christmas Hurdle, but he was better than when he won his second Christmas Hurdle, and he was a convincing winner from Lossy Mouth, who really was never at the races. The mare who we thought was likely to be Willie Mullins' number one hope for this season's Champion Hurdle, even though he won it last year with State Man. Constitution Hill, a really ready winner under Nico de Boinville, and the jockey was adamant the horse would improve for the run, and now he's once again an odds-on favourite for the Champion Hurdle, and that is still the case, even though Brighter Days Ahead produced a jaw-dropping performance in the Grade 1 at Leopardstown over Christmas, winning by 30 lengths, a remorseless piece of galloping. But just as Lossy Mouth underperformed in the Christmas Hurdle, so too State Man underperformed, and by a massive margin in that race behind Brighter Days Ahead. In the staying division, we saw wins for Crambo and for Home by the Lead, but in many ways it was the novices who provide the biggest talking point, with Grade 1 wins for horses like the New Lion, Potter's Charm, the Yellow Clay and Romeo Coolio. And of those horses, it was the New Lion who had, again, most tongues wagging with his imperious performance in the cello at Newbury, since when, we learned over the weekend, he has been purchased by J.P. McManus from Darren Yates. James, the Champion Hurdle, Constitution Hill, is now odds-on favourite. Does that appeal to you?
No, it doesn't appeal to me from a betting perspective, but I thought it was... Firstly, I thought it was a fantastic race to have. We talk so much in here on the show about races that are at Cheltenham Festival and everything geared. Well, this was a proper clash, and this was something to look forward to. We weren't sure if it was going to happen. Same as it said with Ballyburn and Sagino, it's the same reasoning, but it did happen. We got two brilliant hurdlers that turned up, and what a result for Constitution Hill and his many supporters. We've heard so many updates, we've heard so much about him. Yeah, I think for a second, before we talk about Champion Hurdle, that's a bit of cracking work from Nick Henson, his team and all work. Yeah. I mean, to get him back, having been, well, we feared he might not be alive at one point, didn't we, when he was rushed into hospital with colic. So to be back and winning a Grade 1 on his first start as well is pretty special. So credit to all. But let's talk about him. I wasn't overboard with how impressed I was by him. I thought he was good and back to the same exceptional level that you'd expect from a Grade 1 winner. But I didn't feel that was the same brilliance as we saw from his absolute optimum. Now, I always felt this about Sprinter Sacra in many ways. I thought when he came back, everyone said, oh, he's back to his brilliant best. And I thought, well, he's close to it, but I don't think Constitution Hill will ever be at the same level as he once was. I think he's going to be just a fraction below it. And that certainly looked it. Lossy Mouth didn't run a race at all. I don't think we got the battle we wanted. I thought she ran very well. She beat Burdette Road, who's a good standard. So she ran to a certain decent level, but I don't think she ran to the same brilliance as we saw from her last season when she won those two races at Cheltenham, particularly the Mayor's Hurdle. Few of Willie Mullins' horses did underperform over the Christmas period. And I think that's something I'm just wary of when I'm looking anti-post-wise, is that there were one or two that State Man, for instance, maybe just want to watch this closely before being absolutely sure about what I think. I think Constitution Hill will probably win the Champion Hurdle because we don't know what's going to happen with the mares. If the two mares turn up, suddenly game on. We've got a real race on our hands. We are just in this horrible position where this race, the Mayor's Hurdle, robs us of champions running in the Champion Hurdle, unfortunately. So, yeah, he's probably the most likely winner. Those are the two horses that I feel have the potential to beat him. State Man, I was disappointed with him. I don't think he's as good at Cheltenham, and Constitution Hill beat him pretty easily when he was at his best. And State Man doesn't look at his best. So at this point in time, yes, but that is because there's this huge uncertainty about where the mares are going to run, which unfortunately the champions, in my opinion, should be in the Champion Hurdle, but they're not allowed to.
Yeah. Well, they are very much allowed to.
But they're allowed an easier option. And Connections want Cheltenham Festival winners. Who can blame them?
DJ, Constitution Hill, what did you make of that Kempton victory?
I was more positive than a lot of people. I think it's a very hard thing to ask a horse who'd been off for a year, who'd been through the mill, who had worked pretty poorly, you know, in that gallop at Newbury, and to ask him to run to a level of, what was it, 177, I think he got a Racing Post rating when he won the Champion Hurdle in 2023. Like, it's a massive ask, given all that's happened, for him to run to that level. The one thing I will say is, if you were on Constitution Hill in that race and you took a stance and you fancied him and you had a big bet on him at odds on, there was absolutely no stage in that race where you were worried, because after two hurdles, I would say you were looking at Lossie Mountain kind of going, ooh, she's not really travelling with the same zest and enthusiasm as she usually does. Sometimes it can be hard to settle her, and now it's hard to get her going. And you're kind of going, look, I think we're better than, a good bit better than Burdett Road and Lonesome, the other runner in the race. So if you did back Constitution Hill, you were always happy. Yes, the winning distance was 2.5 lengths, but it looked to me a blatant case of the Constitution Hill blew up between the kind of maybe 200 yards from the last hurdle and the last hurdle, and then his class kind of got him home. If we didn't know anything about the horse, we would say that he'll improve hugely from that performance, as will Lossie Mouth. So I do think he is the most likely winner of the Champion Hurdle. I do think he's still brilliant. He mightn't just be, you know, absolutely incredibly awesome like he was when he won the Champion Hurdle in the Supreme, but he's still bloody brilliant. I just find it hard to see if he turns up, because I think he's unbeaten when he's ran. So I think when he turns up, they're pretty sure he is somewhere close to the real Constitution Hill. So I think if he gets to Cheltenham in one piece and gets there with the camp happy, I think he's going to be extremely hard to beat. In saying that, I'd be shocked if either of the mares didn't run in the Champion Hurdle. I think it's 1 to 100 Lossie Mouth surely runs in the Champion Hurdle. This is Willie Mullins' 2-year project. He said it time and time again, and you know, he didn't seem too deflated by the performance at Kempton. It was only just the fact that she didn't travel in the early part of the race that bemused him. But as he said, maybe they've been teaching her to settle, and maybe this was kind of a shock to the system that, God, this is proper 2-mile pace again. As regards Brighter Days Ahead, my instinct is telling me that they have got potentially, and this is a big statement, but you've got a horse now, male or female, who's possibly the best horse Gordon Elliott has ever trained and possibly the best horse Giggenstown will ever own. So she's only 5, but she's now got to a level where you have to talk about her in that category. And are you going to be running the best horse that Giggenstown have potentially ever owned, or the best horse, male or female, potentially, that Gordon Elliott has ever trained? Are they really going to run her in the Mayor's Hurdle? I don't think they will. I think when it comes to the crunch, I think they'll say, you know, we can bloody win a Champion Hurdle here. And, you know, she's still getting £7 from Constitution Hill, who is 9 from 9 on the rules, but there's still this kind of uncertainty where you kind of go, well, you know, he's not always the healthiest and he's produced some dismal racecourse gallops, so there's always going to be that chance. So I think it'll be a late call, which is frustrating for everybody. But I do think when it comes down to the crunch, I think Brighter Days Ahead will run in the Champion Hurdle, and I think Lossie Mouth will run in the Champion Hurdle. And I hope they do, because it's going to be an absolute corker, and hopefully they all run up to scratch. And if they do, I just think Constitution Hill will win.
And DJ, again, State Man, terrible run. And a few of Willie's underperformed over Christmas. And yet, he sent out a shed load of winners. Would you be inclined to forgive some of those Cliff Sutton horses that did underperform over Christmas?
Yeah, I would. It's hard to believe we're talking about potentially some of the stable being out of form. And he's had, I think, is it 18 winners in the last 12 days or something like that?
So great, isn't it?
It's remarkable stuff. And even, you know, seconds and thirds, like, and everything seems to be running incredibly well in the last 5 days. Even Allegory Devassi, that's as good as she's been in ages on New Year's Day at Ferry House. Statement, the problem I have with Statement is that he can't really win a Champion Hurdle, because we already know that Constitution Hill is a good bit better than him. Would you really fancy even a bang-in form Statement to give £7 to Lossie Mouth? You know, I'd back Lossie Mouth off level weights to beat Statement myself. So how, I just think an awful lot needs to go wrong for others for Stateman to win a champion hurdle. And I've often said, like, I think Stateman and probably Envoy Allen even are probably the two underrated and underestimated and underappreciated horses in training. But when you're talking about a champion hurdle that includes Constitution Hill and giving £7 to Brighter Days Ahead and Lossie Mouth, I just can't see how Stateman, even if he's back to his best, can win a champion hurdle. So he'd be the kind of first one I'd rule out of the equation for all that he's been a marvellous horse.
Yeah, I think it's entirely sensible. And James, just finally, the novices, as I mentioned, the new line, Potts Charm, the Yellow Clay, Romeo Coolio, they were the Grade 1 winners. Hadn't foreseen the new line situation. Mm. So there's nothing that Darren Yates had said this season or leading into it that he was in any way thinking of getting out of racing. And certainly you've listened to what he said after the Chalham, the horses win, yep, before that at Newbury. Again, there was no indication that he was about to sell the horse. Like he said, it would only be for stupid money.
Yeah. It may well have been stupid money.
Well, but again, J.P. Manus is very shrewd. I'm sure he pays for a horse what he thinks the horse is worth.
But the horse is clearly worth a lot of money because he won a Grade 1 pretty much on the bridle. I mean, that was as sexy a performance as you can possibly see on a race course. That is winning a Grade 1 just almost sort of taking a mick against a horse who cost 660 grand in fourth, who, be it Regent Stroll, didn't run any race at all. Completely deserves to be favourite for the Turners. On the back of that, he's too short, but I'd want to be backing him. But he has got all the right attributes to win the race. A lot of people say, oh, the Challow Williams always seem to get stuffed in the Turners. This one felt a little bit different. It wasn't bottomless ground. It wasn't sort of a tough staying performance. This was a horse who screamed class. I always think for the Turners, I like a strong traveller, good cruising speed. This horse seems to have all the right boxes. So he's definitely the most likely runner. I think he is way too short. Potter's Charm, again, bit of West Country bias, I'm afraid. Love this horse. Love seeing him win at Cheltenham. A horse who runs in those Cheltenham races, which don't get supported enough, wins them, drops back in trip and wins a Grade 1 really well. I thought it was a really good performance. We'll come on to the weather. I couldn't particularly see how well he jumped all the way around, but the jumps I did see seemed pretty good. And the fact he's dropped back and tripped and still won is a great performance. I've always thought when he won those races at Cheltenham against Valgrand and the like, this will be a better horse in a better race. So I was really encouraged by that he's able to do that. I definitely think he's won. And I'd be interested to see what DJ thinks. Was the one horse from Ireland I thought, okay, this could be one for me, was Copectus Bordes. I think I'm pronouncing it right. Who won a pretty ordinary race, but looks to me has big potential, needs to jump a lot better and needs to learn a lot. That was his first start over hurdles. He strikes me as a horse for Willie Mullins who has got big potential. DJ, are you going to tell me I'm talking rubbish?
Well, you're talking rubbish in the pronunciation, anyway, because I don't pronounce the last letter in France. So it's Corpec de Bord. No, you're not talking rubbish at all. Like, it was one of the performances where he was keen, he clattered every hurdle, he did absolutely everything wrong, and he still bolted up. And you're going, how the hell did that happen? Because you can't jump as poorly as he did. You can't guess at as many hurdles. You can't kick them out of the way. You can't, you know, strangle Patrick Mullins for the whole race and win the way he did. So he just must be a bit of a monster, really. But you know, you can't do all them things wrong at Cheltenham and win races. Like, so I just remember doing Willie Stableter. I think they think he's probably more of a stayer when he does consent to Stettle than a real speed horse. But it was an extraordinary performance. It was one of those that was almost, it was almost surreal. Like, you were just going, he has to stop. Like, he has to stop. And then he didn't. And I'd say the second horse, a good horse as well, Cowabunga, who was well back before the race. I think he was back from maybe eights into fours at the off. So, yeah, he's one of those that just, you know, could just say win at, for argument's sake, the Dublin Racing Festival and be 5-2 for the Supreme. Like, you just don't know how good he is. It was an extraordinary performance. As regards the other two, I love Potter's Charm. I think the new line is real, like, sexy and real, like, oh, Jesus, look at this. This could be anything. But you got Potter's Charm, who is, and Johnny Deneen said this in Up in the Ante, the most beautifully campaigned horse this season, because they obviously won his bumper Fossas last season, but they went to Worcester and won a maiden hurdle, okay? Then they get the experience into him on the old course at Cheltenham and he wins the novice hurdle at the showcase meeting. Then he goes back and takes on Valgrand at the November meeting. All experience on the old course at Cheltenham, because they know he's going for that 2.5 mile race. They keep saying it time and time again. It's the Turners. It's the Turners. And now he's won on the old course twice. He's won over the trip of the Turners. And then now maybe I'm wrong here, but I think they've factored in so many things into this horse that they've said to themselves, well, hold on here a second. Shallow winners have a shocking record at Cheltenham, and even horses that run in the shallow, they've shocking records at Cheltenham. So maybe, and Potter's are the good Nichols horse, what's it called again?
That was Regent Stroll.
Regent Stroll, sorry, brain fart there. Regent Stroll and the new line is going for the shallow. Actually, hold on here a second. I know we have a really strong stare over 2.5 miles, but maybe we should go to Aintree, because not only is that race at Newbury a graveyard for horses going to Cheltenham, but also we could teach them so much over 2 mile 1 at Aintree. And that's exactly what happened. Like, jumping at speed against quicker horses will have taught him so much. And I love what Potter's Charm does from 100 yards from the line to the line in every single one of his races. And I think the new line is going to have to be every bit as good as he looked in the shallow to beat him in the Turners. Because I think trying to pass, if Sam, which he will do, if Sam decides to kick from the second last on the old course at Cheltenham, I know New Line is going to be travelling better than him at that stage, but he's going to have to be seriously good, I think, to pass him. I just love his attitude, Potter's Charm, love the way he's being campaigned, and I think he's going to take a hell of a lot of beating in the Turners. It's a great race, and you've got kind of a few others to factor into the mix now, because will the Yellow Clay go there rather than the Albert Barclays? Will Kopeck the Boards run here? Will Cade Doughty, who won at Leopardstown over Christmas, go here? You just don't know what Willie and Gordon are going to throw into the mix, but at the minute, you'd have to say that it looks like a rare year where Britain are definitely going to win the Turners, in my eyes.
Just finally, before we finish the hurdlers, just one that I thought ran a really nice race, way back in the long walk hurdle, which feels like it was as far back as the super sprint at Newbury. I thought Beauport was a joy to watch in that race, got a really good rhythm, and I think he could have a real show in the Grand National.
Yeah, absolutely. Agree on that. I thought Crambo there was a good winner. You know, what a hell of a training performance to get him back, because, I mean, it just all went wrong last year. I mean, I think Tehupu is clear by miles in that division. Hidden Valley Lake was second. He would potentially be an each-way bet if it was very soft ground. But, yeah, I couldn't put you off, Beauport. It was a great run.
Good news. Bless you. Thank you. Okay, before we move on to our final port, we have something else to tell you, this time about Racing Post Insider. Welcome back to the final part of the front page. We've spoken about all the good stuff, all the positive stuff, all the cheery stuff. For now, the weather. James.
Yeah, I'm glad to bring the tone down. Unfortunately, with great racing, there has to be, over Christmas period, there has to be some pretty bad weather. That's just the nature of the beast at racing through the winter, which pretty much started on Welsh Grand National Day and, to a certain extent, at Kempton over in Britain, where there was extremely bad fog. David's touching it, the situation in Ireland. Chepstow, I was there for Welsh Grand National Day. You could barely see a thing other than parts of a race. Horses would jump the last fence, would go in front of the stands, would then be in gloom, and even on the big screen, it is just basically an image of white. It's gloom, and then every so often the horses would emerge, jump a fence, you'd get to see where their position was, and then they'd go back into the gloom. It was not great for viewing for punters. There's no two ways about it. The Welsh Grand National is Wales's biggest race. It attracts a good crowd, and fair play to Chepstow. The crowds were up as they were across the Christmas period, which is fantastic
really good numbers,
to see.
Yeah.
But yeah, unfortunately, it's difficult. When there is fog, we then had a lot of frost come in just about over the new year. Number of inspections failed, and we've lost some meetings. And the one which perhaps was not so much controversial, but talked about, was Musselburgh on Friday, where there were two inspections on Thursday, which were then, a decision was made to make the decision on Friday morning. The first inspection at 8 a.m. failed. The next inspection at 10 a.m. failed, with the idea that if they give it another bit more time, that frost would melt. As ideally it would be, or frost would fall, should I say. It was a very close decision, and they wanted to give the track as much time as they could so that the ground would be raceable for racing. The third, or the fifth inspection in total, but the third on the day, was held at 12 p.m, so 27 minutes before the first race. The announcement was made that the meeting was abandoned at 12:21, 6 minutes before the first race, where the two horses left in the opener, there had been seven non-runners because of the ground, were in the paddock. And unfortunately, a lot of trainers, owners, race fans, jockeys, etc., left pretty unhappy. We've heard some Racing Post readers who were there and had expressed their frustration, having driven to Musselburgh with the hope that, well, it's a third inspection, it's probably going to be on, and then it wasn't. So it's opened up the idea of how we deal in the sport with situations like this, where there's the potential threat of abandonment. I mean, the only thing I would say on this is that meetings have to be abandoned for safety ground. There's just no two ways you can be about this. There's never any point of risking it, because there's too much pressure on. So those decisions to abandon, I'm certainly not going to disagree with. What I would say from this bit of a disappointing period of a festive period is the communication and the way we deal with abandonments. It needs a bit of improvement, because being told we're just going to inspect, and there's a tweet gone out, there's been a bit of a comment for those people who have left that race course disappointed, for those people who have turned up to a meeting expecting to see jump racing and there's been a very bad fog which they weren't particularly expecting, perhaps there is a better way the sport can speak to those people, because for all that they may never feel I'm never going to come racing again, it just dampens their experience, and we want to give the best experience as we can.
Yes, indeed. Loads of talking points from this, and Chris Cook has raised a few of them in his column on Friday and in his front runner email today, suggesting that there needs to be a more clear and transparent structure around how inspections take place and abandonments are called. He also spoke about the fog, and I know from being with Chris at Cheltenham on New Year's Day, he really strong views about racing in the fog, and the fact that, you know, racing is an entertainment event, and if the people who are trying to entertain the customers can't see, what's the point of doing it? And yet, he polled front runner readers, and almost, well, pretty much three quarters said they would rather press on with a meeting, even if visibility was almost non-existent.
Yeah, well, I can sort of do my own poll in a way, is that I was at Chepstow when the announcement on the tannoy came over that racing would continue, and there was a big cheer. There wasn't a groan, there was a big cheer.
Yeah.
And I think part of it is that people have turned up for the day. They've got ready, they've got there, then it's called off. When you're there, you just want to see it, whatever it is. You
or not see it.
Very good. Make the best of it.
Yeah.
Make the best of it.
Yeah.
What I feel could happen in these instances better is, I mean, I will come back to what Chepstow actually did, but what Chepstow could have done is said, okay, look, we're a bit worried about this fog. It's potentially going to view, it's going to restrict your view. If you plan on coming and you're looking forward to the racing, whatever, just to let you know, there's going to be this fog. If you decide you don't want to come because your view's going to be restricted, here's some money back, here's a refund, you don't have to turn up and have a bad day. I don't know if there's that model in place, but that would be a sensible thing to do. What Chepstow did do, Chepstow put in an offer which was called the wet weather warning, where they said if it rains, if there's a drop of rain on Welsh Grand National Day, they'll give their money back, which seems foolish given how many Welsh Grand National Days I've done. And they said they would basically allow that for the meeting. So that was marked, and people have got a free ticket to Chepstow up until the end of March, which is a great thing to do, which they didn't necessarily have to do. That makes the experience better. It's not the racecourse's fault there's fog. It's not the racecourse's fault there's frost. But how you deal with what is essentially inevitable situations when you're racing on grass in winter, it's just about making that whole experience better, because these customers will come back year after year after year. And the better they're treated, the more likely they are to come back year after year and improve their own experience.
DJ, I'm going to come back to you for your reflection on the weather in a second. Before I do, James, there was another weather angle over the week in which, with there being no ITV racing programme on Saturday, because we lost Sandown and Wincanton. The Newcastle Jumps card, which might have been an option, was abandoned as well. The Jumps meeting in Ireland was abandoned too. But there was no all-weather fixture scheduled throughout the ITV window, partly because of Premier Racing and protected windows. Looking at the forecast for this week, this obviously will depend on when you're watching this programme, but as we sit now, this morning Warwick said that they were waterlogged in places, Kempton's waterlogged in places. Warwick said they wouldn't be able to cover given how things are at the moment, and there is a heavy frost coming in later on this week. So there has to be a fair chance that Warwick and Kempton will be vulnerable. At the moment, as we talk now, there are no all-weather fixtures scheduled for the ITV slot on Saturday afternoon. I think you can bet as sure as hell there will be now during the week, because I think the BHA, they had to take a call during the week. Yeah. They didn't schedule any meetings for the ITV window. With hindsight, they should have done. I'm sure they will this week.
Yeah, you hope so. It's obviously disappointing when there's a weekend with no rating. I would say to a certain balance in that, you know, people do want to watch top grade racing. I don't necessarily think we need to be bending over backwards to just put something on that's not particularly of strong value to the viewers, because this is terrestrial TV. I think it needs to be balanced in that what we're putting on is a really good show, and that people at home will enjoy watching it rather than scrambling around to get put anything on. So I think there has to be a balance. There was a call for greater flexibility, 100% behind that, because this is not going to be just immune to 2025. Weather is always going to be a problem in racing, and being able to say as far ahead as we can that okay, we've got this situation, being able to bring those races around and build up something quite quickly, it's not beyond the realms. All-weather racing is A, on the all-weather, but B, there's a pool of horses which are trained for the all-weather anyway. I mean, collecting those races and putting them together in the right time, putting in a bit of prize money, but doing that a few weeks in advance, it's no bad thing, is it? It's no bad thing to look ahead and trust and be proactive. That's the problem with the sport, is sometimes it's too reactive and proactive. And your other comment regarding premierisation, that was a little bit of a kick in the teeth to those people who are supporting it, but hopefully it still gets its chance to shine in 2025. That would be my... Hopefully that's the BHA's New Year's resolution, is to really pump forward premierisation, because it's a pretty disastrous first year.
Yeah, well, I've been at Cheltenham on New Year's Day. They didn't feel much in the way of Premier plugging on that day. Great day as it was, but it wasn't
a great day with
Premier.
Yeah.
DJ, you've had weather in Ireland the last few days. You could barely see anything at Leopardstown the first two days. That it's got cold as well. What are your reflections on all these weather debates that we've been having?
Yeah, so I would be very much usually in this situation a bit like Chris, where I'd be thinking, this is a joke, you know, we need to do something about it. It's not good enough, it's amateurish, and we need to act, and act now, and here's the solution, and this is what needs to happen. And Chris has put up a few solutions. I don't agree with Chris. I think this is one of these situations where you can't control things. So a lot of bad stuff happens just in racing and doesn't happen in other sports. So you kind of can point to little elements of our industry where you go, look, this is not good enough when you compare it to other sports. The whole inspections and stuff being called off happens in every sport. I played football for years, and big matches, and you're out on the pitch warming up, and the referee is out there and he's putting his foot on the sod, and he's going, oh God, what am I going to do? Like, it happens everywhere. Look at the Liverpool match yesterday, where there was, the health and safety team were meeting twice before the match to decide whether it was on and off. And yes, they made the call and they made it earlier because they knew the pitch, there's underground heating, and, you know, they could get the pitch playable. And then they obviously spoke with the teams that are affected and said, yes, you can hold this match safely. But you look at any other sport, it happens all the time. They're late calls because it's so unpredictable. You can't predict unpredictability. So when it comes to racing, you know, Leopardstown probably thought they might have a fog on St. Stephen's Day, but they didn't know, and you don't know until it happens. I drove to Leopardstown that day, and coming past Dundrum, which is about 3 kilometres from Leopardstown, it was crystal clear. And then you got to Leopardstown and you drove through the gate and you go, whoa, what the hell is this? And I remember ringing Dad at home and I was like, Dad, you won't believe the fog here. And I'm half an hour from Leopardstown. So you don't know what's going to happen in 2 minutes, never mind 2 hours. So I have serious sympathy for clerks here. And a lot of people commenting on these issues are people sitting at home in the warmth of living rooms and saying, oh, it's a joke. How can they call off a meeting? I was looking forward to watching racing on telly. You have no idea, like, the effort and, you know, time and manpower and womanpower that goes into trying to get these meetings held. And I don't necessarily agree with Chris as well, who said this morning, you know, it seems to him that it's like, you know, clerks hoping for a 25-1 shot to come up trumps and that the race meeting will go ahead. I don't agree with that. Maybe he has more information than I do at his disposal. But from chatting to clerks here and being and chatting to clerks, chatting to racecourse managers and knowing, you know, how things happen when there is a meeting and there is an inspection, I think most of them are in the game long enough to have common sense, you know, in their repertoire. And I think they know that they can't just hope for the best and, you know, oh God, fingers crossed. I know it's given -7, but fingers crossed it'll get up to 4 degrees. They're in this game too long to know that they can't do things like that. So I do disagree with that point. This is just one of these situations we can't control. It happens every so often. And this idea of a cut-off point, oh, you have to cut off the meeting by 9 o'clock in the morning or 8 o'clock in the morning, or don't have a second inspection, or, you know, maybe just have a complete cut-off point. But sure, what happens if there's a race meeting scheduled for, just say, Fairy House on Saturday, and there's an inspection at 7:30 in the morning, and, you know, it's frosty and almost raceable, but, you know, it needs a bit of sun to come out, but the sun is due out in the next 20 minutes and it's given temperatures to rise to 4 degrees. But because it's not raceable at 7:30 in the morning, do you just say, oh no, let's pull the plug? And next thing, it's a glorious day and the whole thing is raceable in an hour's time. You know, you can't. It's frustrating, and I get why people are frustrated, but it happens in all other sports. It happens everywhere. And it's almost one of these things that you just have to suck up and say, look, these clerks and these managers, they're doing their best. They're trying to, you know, they're trying to get a race meeting on for everybody, including themselves. And I just don't see how there are protocols that could be put in place, because every situation is different. Every situation might improve in a couple of minutes. And in a lot of these cases, Lee, it's touch and go till that very point. We saw, as James was saying, the situation the other day, where, you know, the horse were on the way down to the start. But that's how close some of these calls are. And if you do make those calls hours beforehand, you know, you could be regretting it and going, oh God, what the hell did we do that for? So that's my opinion on that. I just think, yes, it looks amateurish, but there's just nothing we can do. On the other point, on fog drives me mental. Absolutely mental. I was at Leperstown on St. Stephen's Day, and I was just hoping they call it off, because I couldn't see anything, didn't know what was going on. It was just one of these days where I was going, oh God, I really hope. And there was an inspection, and it looked like at one stage it was going to be called off after the third race on the 26th at Leperstown. And I said, well, at least then we can have that racing post long distance chase move to the last day and you'll get to see it. And the lad to that card, I was hoping it would be called off, because of all things, fog is just infuriating for everybody, because nobody knows what's going on. But yet it's safe, because in a lot of cases, jockeys can see from fence to fence, even though we can't see from the grandstand. So I don't know what the solution is with fog either, because fog can just go in the blink of an eye, or it can land in the blink of an eye. So after talking probably nonsense for the last 10 minutes there and for speaking for so long, Lee, I think this is one of the things in racing where there's no solution to it, and we just have to suck it up. It doesn't happen very often. We just need to suck it up and say, look, let's hope that the people who are in charge of this, the clerks and the managers at the track, are doing the best they can, and hope that they have common sense, which I think most of them do. And I do think they are getting unfair criticism in the last week, because so many of these calls are late calls. What do you think, Lee?
I think you're right, DJ. I think if you're a clerk of the course, you're in a very difficult position. Maybe I'm not cynical enough given my journalist, but I would be surprised if people weren't giving a sincere appraisal of what they believe to be the conditions at the time. I can absolutely understand why owners and trainers get frustrated when they've taken a horse to the races and they feel that meeting was always going to be abandoned. But as you say, DJ, we've had a few occasions in the past where we were pretty sure a meeting would be lost and it isn't lost. Mm. And the weather is just weird. I mean, blimey, over here, we think we get weird weather, but I'm sure at Leopardstown, your first 2 days, you could barely see a thing. And then on day three, weren't the hurdles removed because of low sun?
Yeah, absolutely. It was just a remarkable change of events. But even look at Nace on Sunday. Like, if you were, we were here on Thursday and Friday last week, and if you were to price up Cork on Saturday and Nace on Sunday, which one would go ahead given the weather forecast? You'd almost say it had to be, the biggest chance had to be Cork on Saturday, because the snow was coming in, you know, Saturday night and then into Sunday. And we were bombarded by snow here on Sunday, which was due at about maybe 1 o'clock, which arrived at about 3 o'clock or 4 o'clock, but could have arrived any time. And I just don't know how you can depend on a weather forecast and say, okay, well, look, the snow coming, so we're going to call off this meeting, because then it mightn't come. So I just think it's one of these most frustrating issues, but I just can't see how we can't continue to be frustrated.
Well, you know, over the coming months, we're going to be talking about some meaty, serious industry issues. How great to start with a proper in-depth chat about the weather.
Yeah, two things DJ says, just to follow up on. DJ mentioned the effort that's gone into it. I must have recovered the track the day before the meeting. They had people out from the offices and all sorts. It was a huge effort to do it, and they lost the meeting. So it must be infuriating for them. I remember being with you on one of the days in December meeting where they covered the track. I think it was last year.
Right.
Where they had to cover the track for essentially just after racing, before the temperatures dropped before.
Yeah.
And seeing how quickly they went out and covered this huge track was amazing. It was almost like one of those stop motion things, just sort of like how quickly it happened. So there's so much effort that's put into these teams. They're not just sort of like looking at the weather forecast going, oh, what's it going to be? There's a lot of stuff happens, which people on social media, when they're, of course, they're all clerks of a course as well, give out their opinion. There's a lot of effort that goes into it. And what DJ said there about this is the position we're in, this is what we're hoping will happen. Okay, we're hoping the sun will come out and then it will. That's the sort of communication just the punters at home need. I think that's what people want. Just for those people who are sat at Musselburgh, who are sat within an hour or 2 hours away, just trying to work out whether they should leave, is it going to be on? Just that little bit more, so they've got a bit more of an insight. So it's there going, okay, well, I know the risk I'm taking if I go and drive and it might be called off, but at least I know what the situation is. I just feel that this sport sometimes lacks a good bit of communication, and that it treats racing fans like punters who, they're going to turn up, have a bet, rather than fans who actually want to know a bit more and want that bit more information.
But what do you communicate, James, when there's nothing to communicate? I just don't see. Because what can they communicate? Well, because, apart from saying there's an inspection, can they do?
Well, actually, Ireland do it better. They have, usually on their, the clerk of a course will stand in front of a camera, they'll stand on the track, they'll give a bit of insight as to what they're expecting, what the ground's like. Just that little bit more information, because people at home, there's this idea that people want to know that bit more, they want that bit more information. Okay, look, we're holding an inspection, the ground at the moment is frosty, hope to get up to this temperature, we're up to this temperature, then we'll be okay. Here's the patches of ground where it's not okay, the most of the track's fine. Just that bit more information, so people at home do have at the moment an inspection is called. It's a precautionary inspection or it's an inspection. There's one of two. Precautionary when the ground is raised, ball inspection when it's not. You're deciphering through basically three words, two of which are the same, as to whether you should leave or whether you should go or whatnot. That bit more communication, that bit more insight, just so people know what they're standing up
to. Yeah, I would agree with you on that point. I do think something like, you'd often see Brendan Sheridan or Norcom Wire, and they do give a video assessment of where they are at the moment. And even when it is cancelled, they will do, or abandoned after an inspection, they will say reasons why. That's something simple that can be done. Yeah, absolutely. I thought you meant kind of like as regards, you know, predicting exactly whether it's going to be on or off. But yeah, I do think communications that way, I think we do do well. The IHRB, we give them plenty of flack, but this is one thing they do particularly well. I think it is good to see the clerks with those videos.
Yeah, and there's no answer. As DJ says, I'm follow GJ's thoughts there. This is an issue. No issue is ever the same. No temperature ever the same. No bit of ground will ever be the same. I don't think you can be proactive and say, let's cut it off, because you end up opening a whole new box of tricks and situations. So I think we're going about the right way. We just need to talk about it a bit better.
And at that point, we should probably start. We've done a lot of gassing in this programme, and if we're not careful, we're going to stray into 2026. So at this point, and with no need to declare a winning story on this occasion, I send grateful thanks to David Jennings. DJ, thank you.
Cheers, Lee.
And you too. James Stevens, thank you.
Thank you very much, Lee.
Thank you for watching. We shall return next week when hopefully we won't have to talk about the weather, but I can't guarantee it. Till then, bye-bye.